I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to The Deal Room, where every week we talk specifically about all things corporate finance, from the biggest M&A and PE deals to the strategy that drives business decision making. We aim to bring what you learn in the classroom to life with real world examples, and hopefully at the same time have some fun with it. So let's dive in. Welcome back to The Deal Room, and as per usual, we've got three things on the docket that we're going to discuss. So a quick flavor of the headlines: Reddit IPO launched last week. We're going to look to review and how they performed. And Stephen was strutting around the office like a bit of a peacock last week, saying that he fancies a little slice of the Reddit stock price. So just going to pick his brains, see what the rationale is behind that bullish view, see if we can punch any holes in that. And then we're going to have a look at Microsoft. They have hired DeepMind co-founder Mustafa Suleiman to run a new consumer AI unit. And that's one where I flagged to Stephen. I was like, this looks super interesting just from a strategic point of view, because Microsoft has been pretty active on a number of different fronts to keep that AI advantage over its competitors. So we'll unpack that. And then finally, Unilever. They've approached private equity for the sale of its ice cream business, but you'll probably be familiar with a few of their brands, like one fancies a Magnum from time to time or a Ben & Jerry's to tuck in over your Netflix. But they could be sold for a cool 10 to 15 billion euros. So pretty chunky. So we'll take a look at that as well. But if you did listen to last week's episode, and I did look at the stats, 15% of you who did listen are not subscribers. So please hit that follow, subscribe, and share the podcast if you find it useful. But last week, we did go over some of a tour of the global IPO scene. And a lot of those did go live. So Stephen, perhaps before we dive into those three topics, just give us a quick skinny of how did they perform?
Yeah, thanks, Ant. So three of the five companies that we went through in our global tour of the IPO market and the stock exchange around the world market went public last week. The first to go public was a company called Douglas. And I remember you were quite into Douglas. I think you were lining up a little bit of spray maybe for your significant other. And I don't know, you like the sound of it. Did you buy any Douglas?
Maybe I could buy Douglas a little cheaper than perhaps what it was when it first launched.
Well, look, so Douglas closed down 11.1% despite opening at the bottom of its pricing range on IPO of €25.50. It was trading when I last looked at just under €22. So maybe you can pick up a bargain. It's weird because the order book was stable and it seemed to be several times oversubscribed, relatively solid company. But I think what spooked the market, and this has sent shockwaves across the whole kind of high-end luxury market, you know, talking about Golden Goose last week. I don't know if you saw the Gucci profit warning. They said that the sales are going to be down 20%, massive, massive slowdown in China. When a company like Gucci or Kering, the parent company, comes out with something like that, it tends to get people pretty freaked out. So maybe Douglas, I don't know how expensive its perfumes are. In my mind, it seems like they're really cheap, but maybe they're not.
So with Golden Goose, presumably is not quite at this advanced stage at the moment. So what happens with the bankers now? Are they slightly, would you be spooked by this or
I'd be
not?
Spooked. I'd be massively spooked. I would be putting this IPO off until a good piece of news comes out. And I think there's a little bit of momentum building about a kind of bear case for luxury. So who knows what's going to happen? Douglas IPO closing down 11.1% probably won't have that big an impact. The Gucci news is definitely the big news. But let's talk about car parks. I assume whenever you do the kind of the image montage for the podcast, when you put it on LinkedIn, you're thinking car parks as the attractive thing.
That alongside, you know, when I'm thinking about what type of investments can I get in, what would be a sexy, attractive investment? And it would seem that car parks are in.
Forget Reddit. We're going parking. So Dubai Parking, company that listed in Dubai earlier on this week, up over 30% day one on its IPO. The $430 million IPO was 180 times oversubscribed, something ridiculous, had an order book of $71 billion. And we spoke about it last week. It's, you know, a 40-year concession, 40-year monopoly on Dubai car parks where the market is growing. What's not to like? So yeah, up 30%. Nice bit of good news for Dubai.
And then the final one, what was it? Switzerland?
Galderma. This is the biggest IPO since Porsche in 2022. And it's IPO today. Today being Friday of last week. So as we speak, it was up about 18%. Obviously, when the pod comes out, it might have changed a bit, but that's a big lift for such a large IPO. And again, it restores a little bit of faith. Galderma, skincare, cosmetics, big company, private equity backed. That suggests that the IPO market's still pretty open. And I just want to raise one more IPO before we go into Reddit. Astera Labs. Did you see this in the US? We didn't cover it last week, but Astera Labs, tech company, surged 72% on the first day of listing. So it's all heating up. It's all bubbling.
In summary, what's the tech?
I don't know what Astera Labs does. Shall I have a look?
Yeah, maybe have a quick look. But yeah, there was definitely, there's one we've left off this list here, which is definitely going to be a nice hook to lead us into this first story, which is that of Reddit. Because I'm sure there might have been some of you out there who are having a look at this Reddit share price. But Stephen, before we get into that tech, Astera.
So, yeah, well, it says on their website, let's see, connectivity, AI cloud infrastructure.
Oh, of course. AI cloud infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly. Machine learning. I don't actually know what it does. modules, smart cable modules, dot, dot, dot.
Okay, machine learning, smart AI, AGI.
Well beyond my pay grade. But look, it closed up 72% for good for Astera Labs.
Nice. Well, look, let's dive into this Reddit one because we mentioned a few percentages there. And what, Reddit wasn't actually that far off that tech company, right?
Yeah, look, so Reddit, probably the most hotly anticipated IPO. We've already covered it on the pod a couple of times. It launched last Thursday in trading at $34 a share. And by the end of day one, it had hit $50.44, up 48%, which is a pretty punchy day one climb. And, you know, this has turned Reddit from a market capitalization of 6.5 billion to much closer to 10 billion. Now, raising $519 million for the company and an extra couple of hundred million for the existing large shareholders. So a few shareholders got a liquidity event. In addition, 2 million shares were given to loyal users and moderators. And this is super interesting. There's no lock-in period for these loyal users and moderators. So it would be a bit of a bellwether to see whether these loyal users and moderators just cash out straight away, or they believe that there's quite a lot of upside to ride. So yeah, up 48%. It's trading at around $50 as we speak. Are we bullish? Are we bearish? You're bearish. You're quite risk off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not a Reddit. Do you know what? I've never in my life been on Reddit. I don't know if that says more about my age or who I hang out with.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a massive Redditor. I use Reddit more than I use Astura Labs, but you know, I understand that, and it is our age range, but it definitely caters towards people that get quite into particular niches and particular subreddits and particular trends and things like that. And it may just have passed you and to an extent us by.
Yeah. So look, I know you've said before about Reddit, because we're going to go into your kind of couple of points that you want to go over that you think makes it quite a robust, interesting investment case. And one of the things you mentioned before was around the data side of things, because you know there's that thread that goes through nearly all of our conversations is about AI, and I guess what you need to power the AI is data, right, to fuel the model, to improve the system. So is that the base of this conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. I've turned myself from being relatively bearish on Reddit to being really quite excited about it, actually. Full disclosure, did invest last night. Not a lot, but I thought, you know, I put my money where my mouth was. And I think there's a couple of things here. So the first is, all right, what is the traffic to this website? And it is the third most traffic website in the US. Do you know what the first two are?
Well, I mean, that's just crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's got to be Google. Google's obviously number one.
Google's number one.
Yeah, not sure what would be next.
Google number one with 35 billion views. Okay. YouTube number two. And this is why, by the way, I'm a bit of a Google bear as well. If you've got the top two websites in the US, not by just a little bit, Google has 35 billion views. YouTube has 23 billion. The next biggest is Reddit with 4.5 billion.
Oh, wow.
Think about that.
That's crazy.
And so if you're a Google bear, if you're worried about Gemini and things like that, just go back to that stat. Mind blowing. So Reddit is the third most traffic website in the US. It has 73 million daily active users and 267 million average weekly users. Just as an aside, these are not massively different from Facebook when it IPO'd. They're lower, but not massively lower. And Facebook IPO'd at $102 billion. Just as an aside, it was profitable and it was growing quicker than Reddit. But you know, the reason why I'm excited about this company is because if you think about the cluster of social media companies that surround it, Google, YouTube, Facebook's a smaller website in terms of traffic. Obviously, it's bigger on the apps and things like that. These are all $1 trillion companies. Now, Reddit is IPOing at 6.5 billion. I'm not saying that it's anywhere near these $1 trillion companies, but there's a path to it. And one of those paths is this concept of fueling the large language models. And what I really like about Reddit is it's got 19 years of very well-structured content moderated data to train large language models, because they're all in subreddits. They're all neatly categorized. There's moderators to make sure that the quality of conversation is at a certain level. In January alone, they signed $213 million worth of data licensing deals. So forget the advertising, forget any $213 million in January alone of data licensing deals. This is why I think that this has got some legs, this company, and the upside is clear. There's obviously a bear case as well, but I don't want to talk about the bear.
Crikey, I don't know if I've ever seen you so excited. But talking about data then, I get that moderation angle, but I just had a quick peek at the demographics of Reddit, because I'm in my head, I've always had this incorrect, naive perception of angry boys being on Reddit, perhaps because I'm too, I see too much Wall Street Bets given the general finance sphere that I sit in. But it is a predominantly male community. So 75% male is the stat I saw. And then the other thing is that half the users are in the US. So you've got high concentration being particularly US, whereas I'm sure Google, although yes, China will have the lockdown, I'm sure it's not quite so concentrated. And then the demographic is quite concentrated in more towards, let's call it the younger end of the spectrum, 18 to kind of 29. And so the monetization, I guess, value of customer, does that change as they get older because they have more disposable income and things like that? So with all of those data in mind.
Yeah, it's a really good series of questions. And there are different angles that you can take here. So Reddit's audience trends, younger American male. But within Reddit, there are some really, really significant niches that advertisers can very, very cleanly target. So, and often the niches, whether it's, you know, hanging baskets or bookbinding or Wall Street bets or whatever it might be, those are super lucrative, very, very loyal customer niches that are quite hard to access. You know, they're not like, you know, I am a sporty, athletic 30-year-old, you know, market me trainers. You know, that's too generic in terms of data. Mm-hmm. So there's a nice little angle that Reddit's got that maybe other social media companies don't have. But on the flip side, one of the biggest concerns I would have on the monetization of data for AI story is, you know, AI, the quality of AI outputs is a function of its inputs. And if the inputs are young male American, the outputs are going to trend young male American, right? So, you know, you've got AI is not this mythical thing. It takes inputs and it turns it into semi comprehensible outputs. Yeah. And if the inputs are all angry young angry young trolls, then is the data that they're getting out of this going to be worth it? It's going to have to be balanced with some other data set for sure.
Then you mentioned Facebook, and obviously that's just been a phenomenal corporate story, given where they've come from to what they are today. But one thing is, like, take Twitter, though, for example, or X. So since Elon's come on and he's tried to monetize that platform, I mean, I, for one, was a pretty prolific user of Twitter, both to consume and to post. Soon as he came, I saw a high degradation of the type of information that was coming my way and the volume of adverts as well, that I today don't use it at all. Now, I'm sure others might have a more robust usage of it, but is there any risk of that? Because at least with YouTube, I've always feel like I'm used to seeing adverts on YouTube. So I'm kind of like desensitized to it. And when they start chucking 20-second ads, I'm like, oh, I'll swallow it. But if I'm assuming Reddit is ad-free up till this point.
Yeah, it's got limited advertisement. I mean, they still generate $800 million a year of revenue from advertising, but it is tiny compared to the other social media companies. And to your point, I really like The Guardian's opinion piece this morning. The title was, first it was Facebook, then Twitter. Is Reddit about to become rubbish too? And there is, you know, we've spoken about this on the podcast before. There is that threat that, you know, all right, now you've got to post quarterly earnings, you've got to post quarterly growth rates, time to turn on the taps. And the taps tend to be advertising, which tends to provide a worse experience for the users. So it's getting that balance right. And obviously monetizing on the back end is smart because it's extremely high margin and it doesn't lessen my enjoyment of the platform. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, just going to end with a little bit of background on the CEO. So Steve Huffman, so he was the founder of Reddit, founded Reddit, sold it, left. Reddit went through a number of CEOs unsuccessfully because it is such a difficult company to manage because you've got this very, very vocal audience that is your user base, which is your revenue driver. So corporate CEOs, they had two or three of them, just couldn't deal with the mess that was Reddit. So Steve Huffman came back a few years ago and he's like, I can deal with this because he describes himself as a young troll. He used to be one of those people. So he's just like, yeah, I can take a little bit of flack because I was the one giving the flack right at the beginning. So founder CEOs, historically, with tech-oriented products, have tended to do better than non-founder CEOs because they understand their market a little bit better. They're willing to invest more in technology. They're willing to take more risks. You've seen this with Bezos. You've seen this with Zuckerberg. You've seen this with Musk on the Tesla side. So there's a little bit of, you know, I would say a little bit of reassurance that the original founder of Reddit is matured to the extent that he can take this company public and has still got the desire to make it a really good user experience. This could go both ways. This could, you know, we could be talking about Reddit as the MySpace or the Twitter or the Facebook. Mm. All I know is that my downside is capped by how much I can lose. I haven't done anything silly, but you know, by pumping in a bunch of leverage into my investment.
I think overall it would make sense. In like you said, the valuation of the company is what, $6.5 billion. You said so. Yeah. At the point that they're already signing these data deals, which are in their infancy, that seems incredibly small at this point. So what happens long-term with Reddit? I'm not so convinced, but in the short, medium term, particularly given the desire and appetite for big data sets, then yeah, I see your case.
And I'll leave you with one stat. When Facebook IPO'd in 2012, it was trading at a 33 times revenue multiple. Reddit's trading at an 8 times revenue multiple. I'm not comparing like with like, but that is a significant difference. Mm. Here we go.
All right.
Get on your app.
Boot it up, baby. All right. So Microsoft. And this one, I just thought, how can Microsoft get away with this when I saw this headline? And also I thought Mustafa Suleiman, having just read his book not that long ago, I was thinking, crikey, he's jumping into bed with these guys. But I'm assuming he's doing that because he feels like he's going to be able to have more of influence in terms of his desire for containment and so forth. But yeah, explain to me what's happened here. And then let's talk about what Microsoft is up to strategically.
This is a totally crazy story. I'm just going to back up for a couple of seconds because I was doing some general research on Microsoft. Do you know what its market cap is at the moment?
Microsoft now?
Yeah.
2.5? 3.2. Oh my God.
Do you know how much it's added to its value cap, to its market cap since the $10 billion announcement of the investment in OpenAI? How much has it added to its market cap?
700 billion.
1.15 trillion.
That is just insane numbers.
It is absolutely bombastic. And again, you know, thinking back to our podcast last week where we were talking about the biggest companies in Switzerland at a market cap of 280 billion, these guys have added four times that in less than a year. It is remarkable. So just to give that as context to the story that we're about to go through today. So the high level story is Microsoft is, through extremely clever engineering of relationships with AI companies, leapfrogging almost every large tech company in terms of getting to the front of the AGI, generative AI queue. So obviously it did it with OpenAI. First investment, $1 billion back in 2019, and then has topped it up, and that mega round last year that coincided with the release of ChatGPT. Recently, it also invested and signed a partnership agreement with the French company Mistral. I think we spoke about this a couple of months ago. Multi-year partnership, focusing more on providing AI tools for the public sector. So trying to lock up that space. So you've got the ChatGPT, the kind of B2C angle. You've got the public sector B2B angle. And then this is the one that really confused us. So effectively, Microsoft has acquired all of the major people from a new AI company called Inflection, run by, as you said, ex-DeepMind co-founder Mustafa Suleiman. So what basically happened was Mustafa Suleiman, ex-DeepMind, ex-Google, set up a company called Inflection, AI company, large language models, etc. Raised a bunch of money in June last year, got Reid Hoffman, one of the kind of OGs of Silicon Valley, on board, $4 billion valuation, dot, dot, dot. Really one of the hot properties alongside the likes of Mistral. Obviously, we thought, you know, Microsoft, it's done its AI bit with OpenAI. It came out and did its bit with Mistral. And now, effectively, what it's done is it's taken Suleiman and the majority of the employees from Inflection, the chief scientist, the heads of engineering, the chief researchers, basically all the brain boxes in that company, and have said, okay, Suleiman, you're gonna lead the new AI division, the new consumer AI unit, with all of your cronies from Inflection. Now, this is nuts. This is nuts for two main reasons. The first is, if I'm an investor in Inflection, like, what the hell? You know, I've just invested in you at a $4 billion valuation, and suddenly all of my team are leaving to go and join Microsoft. It's kind of gutting it's the carcass of the company. It's the body of the company going to leave and join Microsoft. Reid Hoffman did say in a little piece that all of the investors in Inflection will be very happy with this deal. So there's obviously something going on there. I don't know what. But the second reason why it's really, really suspect is this is an acquisition by any other name. And the only thing that it's not is an actual acquisition that would cause the FTC, antitrust regulators, to start sniffing. So Microsoft has pulled off this kind of jujitsu cheat code for effectively buying all of the intellectual property that is available in the AI space, Mistral, Inflection, OpenAI, without actually buying them. It's nuts.
So there's two parts then, or two questions to go from here. One is like internal, one's external. So external is, as you were kind of alluding to there, is this only seems like a matter of time before the authorities get involved and start to ask some serious questions about this type of activity. And then two, from Microsoft's perspective, how do you manage so many big egos in one room? I mean, if you stuck, I'm going to have a guess that if you stuck Mustafa Suleiman in, and then put him in there with OpenAI, they're not going to get along particularly well, because actually our conversation before was that the reshaping of the organizational structure of OpenAI was in the pursuit now of becoming a more profit-oriented business. Mustafa Suleiman stands for the polar opposite of that, if his recent book is to be believed, which only came out 12 months ago. So I understand Microsoft's goals, but you're trying to manage the LA Lakers in the early noughties, where you had Shaquille O'Neal, premier player, and then Kobe was coming up, and you had two dogs in one team, two big dogs, and they just can't live with each other. Surely this is not going to work. An all-star team never performs well.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Let's take the external point first. Is this going to get some antitrust, you know, Competition and Markets Authority in the UK, the FTC over in the US? Are they going to come sniffing? Now, this is where Microsoft has been so clever, and it kind of reminds me of the mid-90s. Microsoft have been amazing historically at basically acquiring to eliminate competition and acquiring to create monopolies. And they did eventually get rebuked quite significantly, but they got away with it for quite a long time. So talked about OpenAI. So this, it feels like an acquisition by any other means, but they've invested $13 billion in OpenAI, and they technically don't own any shares in OpenAI. Technically, A, because this is a profit cap company operating underneath a not-for-profit. By the way, if you buy a not-for-profit, you don't have to declare it as a merger. It's just a quirk of the system. And the relationship that they've got with OpenAI is, we are going to take up to 50% of your profits until you have repaid that initial investment. So it's more of a kind of derivative of a share ownership as opposed to a direct share ownership. Now, the flip side to that is, as part of that deal, OpenAI has to use Microsoft Azure's infrastructure. So that's starting to feel quite anti-competitive, quite like a bit of a lockup between two supposedly independent companies. Microsoft only has a board observer position on the OpenAI board, but you can see how they're being very, very clever, but quite obvious about the fact that they basically want an acquisition by any other means. They've had this massive issue with Activision Blizzard. The FTC's gone after them. They don't want that again. And this is the same with Inflection. You know, they wouldn't be able to buy Inflection tomorrow. You know, the FTC would block it. There'd be lawsuits and things like that. So they've done what they think is extremely smart, effectively bought the entire team and paid out the Inflection investors in some way, shape or form. I don't know what that looks like. I don't think anyone does yet. So they're basically trying to concoct all of these sidebars. And I wouldn't be surprised if what they do causes a precedent for competition laws to change. So, you know, this relationship between a massive company and a quote unquote not-for-profit, that seems like a loophole. This effective acqui-hire, but without actually taking control of a very, very high potential constituent of the AGI space, Inflection, that sounds like a bit of a loophole. So I think the knives are going to be out. I think the Competition and Markets Authority, Lina Khan at the FTC, they're going to start. I mean, they're already looking at this. It's absolutely nuts.
So before we go into the internal, because I'd like to get your view on that as well. When Trump becomes president, you heard how I said that. So what does that actually mean for antitrust, though? Are people talking about that yet?
So people are not particularly, people in the kind of libertarian kind of hyper-capitalist world are very upset with Lina Khan and with the FTC and how they've been getting their elbows out over a lot of different issues, including Microsoft and Activision. There has been calls on Joe Biden to fire Khan, say, look, she's causing an absolute, you know, she's disrupting what we think is the healthy running of the US market. And I wouldn't be surprised if Trump fires her as soon as he becomes president. Hopefully he doesn't become president, but you know, if he does, I wouldn't be surprised because he's quite good at just, you know, very fast twitch hiring and firing. And I assume she's on the chopping board.
Okay. So yeah, the internal, I mean, you've worked in big organizations yourself in the past. I'm sure you've seen big personalities and some collaborate, some clash. But I mean, this is the egos in the AI space have got to be huge right now. And it's all about staking the claim. This is a moment in human history that's unfolding at the moment. And I guess everyone wants to stake their claim that they were the centerpiece of this. So how do you put a Sam Altman and a Mustafa Suleiman there together?
Just as a reminder, Mustafa Suleiman was put on leave by Google because of his overly aggressive, hyper-intense management style, which he now very much regrets. And Sam Altman is the guy that came out and said, we need $7 trillion to retrofit the infrastructure of the world for artificial intelligence. So these guys, they're not wallflowers. Let's just put it that way. And I love this statement that came out by OpenAI in reaction to the Inflection news. We congratulate Mustafa and Karen, the chief scientific officer, on their new roles and look forward to working with them, said an OpenAI spokesman. Our partnership with Microsoft is grounded on leveraging Azure supercomputer infrastructure built for OpenAI. We also continue to develop useful AI products like ChatGPT. So it's basically like, all right, well done, Mustafa, but we're still the main players in town. We're still the ones using up the majority of the compute. Remember, by the way, when it comes to two egos, it's a battle for scarce resources. And Azure, the NVIDIA infrastructure that goes into Azure, that's the scarce resource. You need massive, massive computing power to do any of the stuff that we're talking about today. So it is going to be, you know, just imagine two kids on the playground fighting over a football or whatever it might be. There's only one football. You're going to have to try and figure it out. So yeah, this is theoretically OpenAI are not, you know, they're not in the same office as Microsoft and they are external to Microsoft. But yeah, there's going to be some clashes here for sure.
Mm. I guess now you start to see Adela's ability to of management. But I actually think it could be quite a clever move in a sense of, let's just take it default. The two don't get on. However, given the way that Suleiman has positioned himself now into the more regulatory AI kind of data safetiness containment type side of things, maybe that's a nice layer to package up the OpenAI product in order for it to be more, I guess, to be more in keeping with what regulators are going to be pressing on.
You might very much be right. And this is not going to be the first time that two big egos that don't necessarily, I don't know whether they don't like each other, but two big egos have been part of the same organization. That's kind of how investment banks have been run for since day one. It can work and it can fuel creativity and competitive tension and even collaboration. We'll see.
All right. Well, look, final story before we wrap up. Unilever and ice creams and private equity. It's quite a few words there. So what's going on?
Yeah. So Unilever is the consumer discretionary goods company listed in the UK, operating globally. And they've got brands that range from Marmite to Dove to Ben & Jerry's to Magnum. And they have, historically, they've had five different business units: ice creams, beauty and well-being, personal care, home care, and nutrition. And just backing up a bit, in 2022, Peltz, Nelson Peltz, got a board seat as an activist to say, hey, Unilever, you have been performing extraordinarily badly. Their share price is down 8% over the last 5 years, which is pretty shocking, right? I think comparable companies are up between 7 and 15%. So not massive, but certainly Unilever has been underperforming. So Peltz getting his board seat has prompted a new CEO, Schumacher. And Schumacher has come in with the express intention of shaking Unilever up, really, really focusing on costs, cutting out non-core divisions, making this company a little bit leaner and a little bit meaner. So the announcement that came out a couple of days ago was that Unilever are hiving off its ice cream division, as we've said, and they're also cutting 7,500 jobs in a relatively large restructuring. Actually, the market quite liked it, up 5% in reaction. So look, you know, they're doing something. The jobs cut's going to be good for the bottom line, ultimately. And this ice cream division, the reason why they're spinning the ice cream division off is because it's relatively discreet. You know, when you're thinking about M&A and you're thinking about spin-offs, it's much easier to spin off a relatively self-contained unit as opposed to something that's deeply intertwined with other product areas and other elements of the supply chain. So Unilever's had success with this previously. They've spun off their tea division to CVC for €4.5 billion in 2021. They spun off their spreads business. I don't know what kind of spreads they were, but spreads. €7 billion worth of spreads. We're not talking the financial spreads.
Yeah, I mean, cups of tea and spreads. These are pretty chunky numbers. That's more than $10 billion right there.
Yeah. KKR bought that in 2017. So I don't think there'll be any shortage of buyers from the private equity space for the ice cream division that hosts such brand names such as Ben & Jerry's and, as you said, Magnum and things like that.
So what is it with the profile of these types of divisions? So we got like ice cream, spreads, tea, they all kind of fit within the same kind of bucket, albeit different products. So what do PE firms see within these businesses?
Well, I think a PE firm will be very interested in any spin out, because whenever a company announces that it is considering a spin out, that often means that that company is non-core to the business operations and therefore has been slightly neglected for the last few years. So, you know, I would be looking and going, gosh, here is a great company that is only taking up 1/5 of the central management's time because they've got personal care, home care, beauty and well-being and nutrition. If we can really give this a shot in the arm and really focus on the optimization specifically of ice creams or specifically of spreads, remember these are durables, So they go off relatively quickly, and there's transportation issues and supply chain issues and things like that. You know, private equity be licking their lips, you know, literally, because it's delicious. and thinking, look, this is an underloved, underappreciated asset within a big conglomerate that has got brand names that are, you know, that are incredibly well known. And if we just put a little bit of focus into this, obviously put a little bit of debt into it as well, because that's what private equity does, this represents a potentially interesting turnaround story.
Is there usually like a precedence for in this scenario where you would just review the management team and you slot in someone who's done this sort of thing before? There's like a crack team. There's like an ice cream man who comes in literally and just has done this a million times, does it again. And then he goes off to his next ice cream job.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. There's, you know, private equity firms, especially the big ones, will have really robust Rolodexes of CEOs that have turned around companies in certain spaces, one of which would be the consumer discretionary space, this consumer durable space. And they will have track record of doing this. And this is one of the main reasons why private equity will get interested in a company. You know, I always ask students when we're teaching this, what makes a good buyout target? And a lot of people go, great management team. Well, it's usually the opposite, right? It's a bad management team. And CVC or Carlyle or KKR will know the right person to slot in and really, really take it by the scruff of the neck and turn it around.
Okay. Well, look, we'll wrap it up there for this week. Thank you, Stephen, for those insights. And what I'm going to do is drop another poll, like I always do. Parkin actually was the favorite. And so
the
community did very well last week. Well, let's see if you can take that streak to 2 weeks in a row, back to back. I'm going to put Reddit, simple shootout. Yay or nay? Did Stephen convince you or not? You'll have to decide how long the time frame is. But are you feeling bullish or are you feeling a little bit more bearish? We'll see. All right. Thanks, Stephen.
Cheers, Anne.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.